So these sorts of tensions and fissures start to pop up both inside the organization and outside, because as an organization grows, one person can't do everything. Their decisions are made intuitively in their own head. No one knows how they're done. So some of the problems that I see is this burns out the CEO. They can only be at one place at one time. But it also creates a culture of dependence, allowing others to not take the risks. They might miss revenue opportunities or not speak their own mind. And it just creates this unintentional, siloed, top-down thinking.
My guest today on Mission Impact is Emily Taylor. Emily and I talk about the challenges nonprofit CEOs face as they become victims of their own success, how nonprofit leaders can become disconnected from their community as their organization grows, and how when an organization is overly associated with the CEO, this can result in a culture of dependence and bottleneck decision-making. I appreciated what Emily had to say about when an executive director becomes a victim of their own success. It usually isn't what the leader intends, that all decisions have to go through them, or everyone in the organization reports to them, or they have to be at every event or meet every donor. But if they are the founder or an executive director who's been there for a while and created growth within the organization, all of that may have been the only option early on, but it just no longer serves. It doesn't serve the organization, it doesn't serve the mission, and equally, it does not serve the leader. It can lead to burnout and that becoming a martyr to the cause that I'm always hoping leaders are releasing themselves from. But what's the alternative? Taking steps to build shared leadership. Andy Robinson in episode 21 said, "If you're not actively grooming the next generation of leadership for your organization right now, by definition, you are failing at your mission." It's a big statement. And leaders need to ask themselves, what is absolutely actually critical for me to be doing myself? And alternatively, what am I doing myself because it feels easier, because it might take a little more time to bring someone else up to speed or give them the context? And it may feel like extra time in the short run, but in the longer run, you're taking small steps to build capacity within your organization. Every time you bring another person along on a donor visit or an event and introduce them, or ask them to speak at an event or a board meeting to represent the organization, or you ask them to lead a part of a board meeting, these are all small steps you can take to build more people into the leadership of your organization so that it's not all on your shoulders. Take a look at your current to-do list. What really needs to be there? What could be delegated if you spent just a little time getting the person ready to take it over? What is there because you have not taken any time to document systems? People usually think of documenting as writing everything down, but I've been using a system like Loom, which enables you to create short videos, screen shares, etc., and it's a great way to explain what needs to happen. Or even the next time you're giving feedback to someone in your organization on a work product. You can just mark up the product. That is one step. But then making a Loom or a short video where you explain the why behind the markup brings people into your thinking as well. Mission Impact is the podcast for nonprofit leaders who want to build a better world without becoming a martyr to the cause. I'm your podcast host and nonprofit strategic planning and evaluation consultant. On this podcast, we explore how to make your organization more effective and innovative. We dig into how to build organizational cultures where your work in the world is aligned with how you work together as staff, board members, and volunteers. And all of this is for the purpose of creating greater mission impact. Mission Impact is brought to you by Grace Social Sector Consulting. Grace Social Sector brings you whole brain strategy consulting for nonprofits and associations. We help you move your mission forward, engage all voices, and have fun while we're doing it. We combine left brain strategy and analysis with bright brain wisdom about human complexities for a proven whole brain, whole organization process through which every stakeholder thrives. Reach out to us for support and facilitation of strategic planning, demonstrating your social impact, or just getting started with an organizational assessment. Check out gracesocialsector.com for free resources. We especially love working with staffed nonprofits and associations with human-centered missions. Well, welcome, Emily. Welcome to Mission Impact.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I like to start out each conversation with a question around what drew you to the work that you do? What would you say motivates you, or what would you describe as your why?
Yeah, I'd love to answer that because I feel like it's a bit of a longer process, but I'll start with where I'm at now, because nonprofit CEOs, you know, they tend to come to me when they're victims of their own success. So they might be feeling their day-to-day responsibilities and no longer have the pulse on those that matter to their success, their donors, their partners, their clients. I tend to call it their community. And so they can see it in conflicts and frustrations that don't make sense. So what I do is really help them find and remove the stones that are in that path so that these relationships can really thrive and help them grow. But objectivity is really key. So that's the reason I say that is like how I got here is, you know, that's the unique skill set that I bring. I've really mastered the art of listening to the messy side of people. So finding those perspectives and experiences that make people act in a certain way. But I'm also able to analyze that information and really think about it strategically to make it usable for a nonprofit team. So I really attribute that to my human-centered design background, which I know we share, Carol, because I started in the for-profit space. And really, I saw how companies in the for-profit space don't just understand what people need, like a toothbrush or warm clothing, but they really sought to understand what motivated people, their emotional and subconscious needs that compelled them to buy booties for their dog to protect them from the cold or scented plugins to bring a certain vibe to their house. So I did a lot of work in that space, but I realized my real motivation was to help people with real problems. So housing, climate change, you know, critical thinking about how we view the world. And so at that moment where I was thinking about transitioning from for-profit to nonprofit, I thought, how can I bring this understanding of what really motivates people and translate that for the nonprofit space? So that's where I found, how I ended up here, you know, whether as a designer, a community leader, or, my short time as an executive director, I've always balanced the art and the science, the emotional and the thinking side of people, because I feel like it gives us that full spectrum of what makes us human. And that's really what motivates me is humans understanding other humans so that we can work together to solve real problems.
Yeah, there's so many threads in there that I really appreciate. First, yeah, what motivates people? So that definitely like where I start each of these conversations, I love hearing kind of the backstory to, you know, what led people to do the work that we do. And in this space, there's always, you know, there's always an interesting why. You mentioned this mix of art and science, and I feel like we definitely have that in common as well as I'm doing, you know, work with strategic planning with organizations. I really want to bring both that kind of analytical side, but then also like all the messiness that you talked about of the people and their perspectives and how do we bring all of that together and help people have a good conversation about kind of what's going on. So one of the things that you talked about was the challenge of an executive director kind of being a victim of their own success, of when organizations are kind of overly dependent on that CEO or that executive director. Why would you say that that actually is such a common happenstance in our sector?
Yeah, it's so interesting as now we're talking about the sort of science and art or the emotional and, you know, thinking sides of our brains. I think being able to see a problem, like by pulling some of those things apart, I think is really helpful for understanding people because, you know, a CEO is always a person. And it works really well to have a very, you know, talented and successful CEO or executive director leading an organization, which is why I see it all the time. But it works until it doesn't. And what I mean by that is when the organization grows to a certain size, it just doesn't, it can't all hold in one person's brain. But it is great, you know, like to start, you can make decisions really quickly. You really have an ingrained set of values that you don't have to question or discuss. But they're the CEOs, not the organizations. And so part of the problem that I see when I, you know, talk to people in this situation is that the community starts to associate the organization with the CEO. So they start to only take it seriously if the CEO shows up at an event, or they feel like the CEO is the only one who can influence a decision. And that takes power away from other people at the organization, and they can't always do their job when it requires influence and decision making. So these sorts of tensions and fissures start to pop up both inside the organization and outside, because, you know, as an organization grows, one person can't do everything. And when their decisions are made intuitively, in their own head, no one knows how they're done. So, you know, some of the problems that I see is this burns out the CEO. They can only be at one place at one time. But it also creates a culture of dependence, allowing others to not take the risks. They might miss revenue opportunities or not speak their own mind. And it just creates this unintentional, siloed, top-down thinking that's, I'll be honest, a bit authoritarian, which most nonprofits do not want to be. They want to have broader perspectives and care about others, but it's the old way just is no longer working for them. So it just creates this pile of challenges that no one seems to know how to move forward, because they can't, what worked in the past is now not working. And there's also, when we talk about this, the emotional side, there's a lot of emotions going on here. There's, you know, maybe a CEO questioning their own skills that have gotten them that far. And also their community, whether it's staff or outside people, start to, you know, wonder or even fear what happens if the leader isn't there anymore, or what the organization really is without them.
Yeah, there's so many things in that as well. I mean, that growth point, like, so, you know, an organization can grow, you know, for a while, dependent on that one person who's really kind of, you know, making those decisions, influencing people, holding the relationships of maybe board and donors and, you know, key influencers, all of that. But yeah, over time, if the organization becomes less of an organization and really just a mirror of that one person, it really, a couple different things come to mind of just kind of, it really kind of clamps down on how much more the organization can grow, because there's only so much capacity that any one person can bring, no matter how much they martyr themselves to the cause and work too many hours a week and all of that. But there are always those limits. But then it also, you know, I've seen organizations that, you know, after a leader like that has left, have gone into a spiral of real crisis, because so much of the institutional knowledge, the decision making about any of the things, the relationships, all those things were held up with that one person. And so, you know, when they were no longer able to be the leader, things kind of fell apart. And in one case, I'm thinking of, they were able to pull it back together, but it was a real crisis that they had to go through. And that didn't have to happen. That crisis didn't have to happen.
Yeah, it is. I've written somewhere where it's really an inflection point, because, you know, an organization's been growing, but it becomes a sink or swim moment of, can you make that leap, you know, beyond that, the way things have been with that leader, or do you just keep, you know, draining all your resources around that person? Or in the example you gave, maybe hire someone that you feel like can just pop right in place of that person, but it's not going to work.
Well, right, because nothing's written down. You know, files may not be organized, things may not be documented, who their donors are may not be. You know, all of those things may be missing and may have been in that person's head. And oftentimes, I don't think it's anything. You know, I'm sure there are a few executive directors where it is a case of kind of power hoarding, but I think in a lot of cases, it's just, you know, the moving at the clip they're moving, it seems like it's going to take too long to bring other people into the whole process. And so, you know, how do you help the executive director, the leader, and organizations kind of get themselves out of that bind?
Well, I think it's also important to understand how they got there, because, you know, sometimes it's a founder. I'm sure you've seen a lot of founders in this situation because they really have that that drive, that those values that are internalized, and they're able to grow that organization. But I've also seen some organizations where it's a longtime leader who wasn't the founder, but they really have this magic. I put magic in quotes because people really talk about it being magic, but of course it's not magic. It's like you have to really break it apart and understand. And so, you know, being able to kind of make these, find funding or make quick decisions on their own is something that's going on in their head, in their skill set, in their personality that needs to be pulled apart. And I think also, I just want to like pull this back a little bit, because the other thing to understand is that a lot of times when you've had these leaders that have been able to grow an organization, a lot of times the hiring sort of balances their skill set. So you might be, you know, hiring people that have different skill sets than the leader, that have more like put their head down, get work done, maybe less relationship building. And so they've been sort of attracted to the job by their fit with a bold CEO. And so they don't necessarily have they might be more comfortable letting someone else take risks, but they also haven't been given that space to build those skill sets. So not only are you relying so much on the CEO, but you're also kind of creating a vacuum of leadership and risk-taking in the rest of the organization. So it's really important to kind of recognize all of that in, you know, in this challenge, because it is a lot to pull apart. So I think the hardest thing about this is to really see it. And that's where I'll actually, you know, to be honest, a lot of times the first person that talks to me about this challenge is sort of a number two, because they're able to see this challenge before the CEO themselves might, you know, just because it's hard to see when you're in your own bubble of things that have been working in the past and are no longer working. So really to do this, you know, we kind of talked about strategic planning. You know, a lot of times when organizations have challenges and need to plan ahead, they start to think about a strategic plan. But in this situation, a lot of times organizations are just, they really need to do some reflection before they go into that strategic plan. So that's really where I start to come up in, is help them hold up a mirror to themselves so that they can start to see that bubble that they're in, and, you know, reconnect with the partners and their community in ways that they've lost because they've been so focused on all these stressors that are coming into the organization.
And depending on how the leader is showing up, you know, it's hard for leaders to actually get really good feedback on how they're doing, because people will, you know, censor themselves or not necessarily say things directly. It takes a lot of trust between, you know, a leader and a number two or a leader in their executive team to really be able to kind of have that feedback. And so, you know, when you're doing this kind of big picture feedback from all the stakeholders and synthesizing it back for the organization, it kind of takes it out of that relationship and makes it, it's probably easier for all the folks to hear. And certainly when I'm doing that as kind of the beginning part of a strategic planning process, one of the things that I notice is that often people are pleasantly surprised that there's more commonality in how they're seeing things than they might have realized because they haven't been talking to each other about it. So it kind of brings all these things out into the open.
Yeah, and I think having that objective person come in to be able to hear from everybody is that, like, I do notice things where people maybe they might be using different words, and so it can sound like they're talking about something different. But when you really get into, you know, what do they actually mean? What's their motivation, their intention? That there are a lot of those shared values, like you say. But it takes someone outside of the organization to really understand, like, how are people interpreting the words that you're using? You know, what do you mean when you advocate, when you support? All these words that, you know, they have dictionary definitions, but we put a lot of other associations on them, especially within our own organization. So it's super helpful to just lay it out there. I'll just give you an example because I'm thinking of it is, you know, I was working with an organization and they kept talking about, you know, wanting to make their membership more diverse, more diverse, more diverse. And then they talked about the makeup of the city, which what they worked in. And they talk about, well, we have a very, you know, after, you know, white people, our next biggest population is Black people. And we're really, you know, they were really not engaging that population. But they kept doing these things like putting out things in different languages and trying to connect with like immigration organizations. And ultimately that was not, you know, I would hear them talk about all these, putting tons of time into these efforts, I'll say. And when they said diversity, they wanted to diversify their membership. Everyone was sort of saying the word, but thinking different things. And so I just reflected exactly what I heard back to them. I said, you sound like your Black communities are the biggest population that you're not engaging. So, you know, language isn't a barrier. Immigration isn't the major barrier. It's really getting out into those Black communities and building those relationships. And so just by saying that, we were able to get real specific about this word diversity that they just kept kind of throwing around and take it to a really more specific level that they could focus and act on.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are many organizations that have that goal and have that same barrier of they talk about diversity, but they're not all talking about the same thing, or they haven't gotten clear about what aspects of, you know, human difference are really going to make, you know, make the difference to their organization. Like you're the instance that you're giving that is not just generally, it's a specific group of people who is, you know, a very large population in the community that they're in, and they're not engaging. And so getting into the more specifics. And so what do we mean by these big words that we throw around? That's an important one. So how would you say, what are some ways that organizations can start addressing that imbalance when things are kind of out of whack and the too much is dependent on the CEO?
Well, really, you know, the first thing I do is really help them take a step back and really just start talking about what do they know and what do they not know? because there's a lot of questions out there, you know, whether it's a CEO that needs to transition, or, you know, there's certain things that are, you know, there needs to be a C-suite, there needs to be some more risk-taking and leadership from other people within the organization. It's to really take that step back and figure out what, you know, what's sort of keeping people from some of these things. Are there relationships that are, you know, being sacrificed because of some of these situations? And start to go out and think about, you know, who is this organization beyond the CEO? And what are some of the problems that we're facing? And when we start to lay out what we know and don't know, a lot of times it's these sort of broad questions that are harder to answer with quantitative data. Like, what do people really value from our organization? What, you know, what do people hope we might do without this leader? Like, what could we do? What's sort of like the next level of where this organization could be taken to? You know, how do people feel about some of the things that the organization has done? And so it's some of the things that, like, the only people that really hold those answers are your community and who you work with. So being able to just start to frame out some of those questions that require listening can start to bring some clarity around, you know, I think rather than just accepting that things are the way they are, that you could actually find answers to those questions.
And what would you say are some of the benefits for kind of the different levels of the organization? So, you know, the leader themselves, the board, the staff, the broader constituency, what are some benefits that you see from kind of helping the organization kind of get unstuck from that?
Well, they really get, you know, they really have a better shared understanding of who the organization is. And this, you know, just as an example with a recent client, they, you know, their board was always talking differently about who they were. And they didn't always quite know what to take on and what to say no to. And so by being able to go through this listening work and holding up that mirror, they could really, rather than talk about the leader and like, oh yeah, you got to talk to Larry or whatever, you know, they could really, sit down and talk about who the organization was outside of that leader. And so that was, it was really beneficial for the board and for senior staff to just be aligned on who the organization was and the value it has in the community. But they also were able to start to prioritize things together. And so rather than having one person, you know, the CEO working on one thing and other senior leadership working on another thing, we could really see a holistic view of the challenges the organization was facing. And I say even those chicken and egg challenges where you can't tell what's causing the other. And so you start to go in this spin cycle, like, you know, we can't do a strategic plan until we hire a new executive director, but we can't do a hire executive director until we know where we're going. Those kind of things, you can really just start to lay out and talk about one by one as a team. So it's a lot of alignment, but also showcasing like where does an organization have buy-in? Where does it have overlap? And really some of those key things that you need to go into a strategic plan with.
Right. And I mean, those are the things that I'm, you know, when I'm working with an organization, trying to help them increase that alignment, that shared understanding, you know, talking through the different options so that they can choose what their priorities are. All of those are super important. So on each episode, I ask each guest what permission slip or that they would give to nonprofit leaders, or what would they invite them to consider to avoid being a martyr to the cause and as they work towards building a healthier organizational culture.
I would say I gotta sit and think a little bit. I think to be able to see themselves as a person that has limitations, and we talk a lot about leaders being superheroes, and they are. But also, if you can't see yourself as a human, it is hard to then see your organization as an organization. And so to be able to start to see your own limitations, as we all have, that, you can see your strengths as well as your limitations, and be able to start to, whether it is, another future you desire, moving to a bigger organization or retiring and just volunteering your services in your own pace, whatever that future is you're not going to get there until you can really see your role as a human in a bigger organization, and that those humans can be switched out, and there is, there's great things that someone else can do in that role. And there might be another level that person could take the organization to that you just might, this just might not be meant for you.
Yeah. So, I am inviting people not to be a martyr, but it's also might just be taking off that superhero cape and kind of putting it aside for a little while and saying, okay, actually, I'm a human being with a bunch of human beings trying to move something forward for people, and just, really, really grounding into that.